anxiety RL, the better you are looking at a situation with the antenna and all. And the other one says, no, the opposite way. You want to look for the lowest RL. And this went back and forth. And like I say, Dick, it became bedlam. Let me pick up Andy before we go any further. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, thanks. I just turned the radio on. I was busy running around. How are you? I just want to say hello. And I got something for you that, Dick, you'd be interested in, Mel also. It's a brain teaser that came out of QEX. Maybe you've seen it, maybe you've not, but I'll read it to you and see what you think.
Fire when ready.
Okay, I'm sure, by the way, you had quite a bit of discussion regarding digital TV, which I missed, unfortunately. There's so much to learn regarding that, but eventually we'll come up to speed. Here's something that I saw an article, and I'll just run it by you. I didn't give it any thought, so I don't have the answer because I just saw it, glanced at it, and then I read it, and I said, okay, this is something for the tech desk. I'm going to read it word by word. It's a very small paragraph. It says, consider two RF generators connected to each other with a one wavelength line, and they show a figure of it. The line's characteristic impedance is R plus J0. The source impedance of generator A, and let me just, for clarification, we're going to draw generator A on the left and generator B on the right. By the way, are you hearing me okay? I just was having a little trouble with this radio. Am I okay?
You sound good. Yeah, that exact brain teaser appeared in QEX magazine about 2 years ago. One human being apparently responded to that brain teaser with the right answer, and that guy's answer got published. And you're talking to him. Over to you, Andy.
January, February issues, because it's quarterly, 2003, quite a few years ago. All right, so I'll read it anyway, and then you could explain it. Because for you, the answer would be very simple. All right, so the line's characteristic impedance is R plus J, 0. The source impedance of generator A is R plus J, 0. And that of generator B is 3 times R plus J, 0. All right, now at T equals 0, time equals 0, each generator delivers a signal to the line that produces a wave of power P traveling toward the other generator. The frequencies and phases of the generator signals are identical. In the steady state, what are the readings from the two directional wattmeters inserted into the line to register the power in each direction? And then it says, change generator B to have a source impedance instead of 3R plus J0, make it R divided by 3 plus J0, and keep everything else the same. What do the wattmeters read? Go ahead, Dick.
Yeah, this one had to be solved mathematically. The answer didn't follow good common sense. If I've got a signal generator on the right-hand side, which temporarily I can say it's acting like a load, and if my load is 3 times higher than the characteristic impedance of my transmission line, I'd have a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio. If the load is 1/3 the characteristic impedance of the line, I'd have a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio. So both kinds of load on the right-hand side, generator B, so to speak, both create exactly a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio if you look at them as a load. And believe it or not, every signal generator, if it's properly designed, is simultaneously a load for a signal that is flowing into it from the outside world at the same time that it's a signal generator for a signal being generated inside, going back out. In both cases, you've got a 3-to-1 load, a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio. Common sense would lead you to believe forward and reverse power in the two cases should be the same. They are not. I don't think we should go to this one tonight, Andy. This one is a lot more complicated than we should get into right now. This happened to be an extremely tough brain tweet teaser, obvious by the fact that QEX has, I don't know, I'm going to make a guess, 10,000 people who subscribe. And according to the answer I got back when I gave them that answer, they said only one human being gave them the right answer. And then in the next issue, or maybe two issues downrange, they published my answer. So if you look downrange, you'll see the answer to that one, and it's that simple. I don't think we should go there tonight. I think we should go back to what Mel's email was, and they're looking for something a bit simpler. And let me drop for a second and give an answer to Mel's question. And that is, when I have those two examples I just gave, a 50-ohm transmission line way back, and either a 100-ohm load or a 25-ohm load. Correction, 100-ohm, yeah, or 25-ohm. In either case, 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. When you calculate what a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio really means, it means whatever voltage you're sending down the line, because of a mismatch, a certain amount of it's going to be reflected. A 2-to-1 standing wave ratio will reflect 1/3 of the voltage you're sending down the line. If I'm sending down 1 volt, I'm going to get 1/3 of a volt back as a reflection. In either case, 25-ohm load or a 50-ohm or a 100-ohm load. They're both a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. They're both creating a third of a volt reflected. But there's a big difference. In one case, a third of a volt is in phase. In the other case, it's out of phase at the load. Whenever your impedance is lower than your transmission line impedance, you get a inverted phase. A positive voltage and it becomes a negative voltage, even though it's a sine wave. It's a sine wave that just flips over. So that's one of the ways you can tell what kind of a mismatch you've got. Is it a negative voltage or a positive voltage you got? But that voltage has a magnitude of 1/3. If I convert that into decibels, it's a little bit less than 10 dB. I think it's 9.5 dB. Let me round it off and call it 10 dB. So in other words, your voltage reflection coefficient expressed in decibels is minus 10 decibels. That's a fancy way of saying 1/10 the power, 1/3 the voltage. And by the way, 1/3 the voltage, to convert it to power, you square it because power equals E squared over R. So 1/3 the voltage squared is 1/9. It's close to 1/10. I'm rounding things off. It's a little bit stronger than a minus 10 dBm signal. But now, a minus 10 dBm signal reflected. If I make the load better and it becomes a minus 20 dBm signal, which happens to be 1/10 of a volt reflected instead of 1/3 of a volt, if I make an improvement and my reflection coefficient went from minus 10 to minus 20, is minus 20...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
The next question is minus 20 dBm reflected signal a bigger number or a smaller number? The answer is yes. Minus 20 dBm is a weaker reflected signal, but expressed in decibels, you went from minus 10 dBm of reflected, minus 10 decibels of reflected signal versus a minus 20 decibels of reflected signal. The magnitude of the number got bigger, but because it's a negative number, it represents a smaller amount of reflection. Oh boy, you can go around and around on that circle for a long time and agree to disagree. This may have been a little bit of what you got into that night, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Exactly, this is K2KEY. Misunderstood completely. And I remember that QEX and all, and I remember starting on it, and I said there's more to this than meets the eye. And didn't pursue it very far because I saw that it's not a simple, simple, straightforward answer to that. This whole thing here with visualizing what is happening is really a lot more to it than that. And the way I was going to do it, if they weren't a bunch of wackos, to some extent, some of them, I mean, they had a few were decent. There's a few real nice people I love to talk to on there. but there's a few of them that just, when they get off on the tangent, they just keep going at maximum speed. You can't deal with them. So what I was going to do, I was going to start this with a piece of paper, and, you know, actually, you don't need a, we're not going to do a Smith chart type of a plot on this, but a simple piece of paper, and start it back up this whole deck, really, and start it really with basically with the voltage and current along an antenna, and exactly how it takes place simply on a simple half-wave, say a half-wave dipole deck. But I don't know if you want to go that far tonight, over.
Oh, you just said some magic words. I attended the IEEE AP meeting that took place at BAE, British Aerospace Engineering, which used to be called Hazeltine, in Northport on Pulaski Road. I attended the IEEE Antennas and Propagation meeting 2 weeks ago, I think it was. So here's a bunch of antenna engineers going to a meeting discussing using a network analyzer for making antenna measurements. And two of the guys were in the lobby. We had a little bit of extra time, and I asked them the question about what is the standing wave ratio on a perfectly impedance-matched half-wave dipole in free space. Oh, boy, I wish you could have seen the look on their face. It was the deer in the headlights look. Like, what the hell are you asking? Isn't it one-to-one? It's a perfectly impedance-matched. To which I said, if that was the right answer, do you think I'd be asking this question? So, a simple dipole, half-wave dipole, the most basic of all antennas, invented by Heinrich Hertz way back in 1863 or something like that. If it's a 72-ohm resistive antenna, fed with 72-ohm twin lead from a 72-ohm transmitter, it's perfectly impedance matched. It's in free space, no reflections anywhere. The signal goes down that transmission line once, never comes back, one-to-one standing wave ratio. As soon as that signal goes down the transmission line, turns the corner, and goes an eighth of an inch down the wire of the dipole. My question to these guys was, what is the standing wave ratio on the wire of the dipole? And the look on their face, I wish I had a camera in my hand at that time, Mel. That is something that we ham radio operators stand a pretty good chance to understand it. The guys who have taken the highfalutin college courses that teach them fields and waves and Maxwell's equations, you could almost say it does not answer that question. They haven't considered it, and if they have considered it, they misunderstand it. So the voltage that's on the dipole itself, which has got this sine wave of distribution, very...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Very high voltage at the tips of the dipole, a very low voltage at the center of the dipole, and at one instant of time, the left-hand side tip is great big negative voltage, the center is near zero, and at that exact same instant of time, the right-hand tip of the dipole is very positive. So you can draw a snaky curve between the two. That's what happens at one instant of time, and a half wave later, everything is reversed. What's really going on inside the dipole makes a lot of people uncomfortable. I wonder how far you want to go into that one, Mel. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Well, that's why I wanted to do it very simple, very straightforward, because that's what I brought up. I asked them, I said, tell me what happens at an eighth, at a quarter, at three-wave, three-eighths, and at half-wave length. Half-wave weight, or half-wave point. And you know, they couldn't tell me what was happening. I says, well, this is a half-wave dipole. This is what it's made up of. So tell me, tell me a step-by-step what is taking place. And that, in fact, I gave them some parameters, some voltage and current parameters, and I told them, let's measure and peak as we go along there, as we work our way out towards the quarter wave point. And you know something, Dick? It was, like you say, if I could see them eye to eye, they would most likely there staring at the mic or their mouth open because they had no idea what I was talking about. And at the same time, all I got was a bunch of real nonsense. And we both got belittled, right? That made us that we could pay play to listen to them. I mean, it was a laugh. Now I laugh about it. But they made it sound like we could play, we're so small that we could play handball on the side of a curb on the street, Dick, over.
Yeah, what's sad about this whole situation is that the way we teach wireless engineering in the United States, you've heard me say this before, one of my favorite hobby horses is that I know there's a huge amount of improvement that's possible in the way we teach wireless engineering, RF circuits, antennas in particular. There probably is no more basic, simple, beginning, rudimentary antenna than a half-wave dipole properly fed in free space. Nothing more simple than that. An extremely high percentage of electronic engineers in general, and even antenna engineers in particular, have a fairly poor understanding of the most rudimentary antenna dipole. Consider that as a foundation. Consider the fact that there are 5,000 kinds of antennas in existence today, and the most basic one is not understood. What's your guess as to how much is understood about the other 4,999? You can make a guess on that one, and you'll be pretty right. Impedance-wise, the center of that dipole has the maximum current, the minimum voltage, and if you divide it one by the other, it'd come up with something very close to 72 ohms. As you move out from the center of the dipole, the current gets weaker, the voltage gets stronger. By the time you get out to the tips of the dipole, the voltage is the maximum, the current goes to near zero. The tip of the dipole has an impedance something like 2,000 ohms if you could feed it directly. And end feeding a dipole is a perfectly valid thing to do. You could take a half wavelength long piece of wire where in an ordinary dipole you would cut it in the center, put an egg insulator there, and put the transmission line there. The left and right side of the transmission line would be across that center egg insulator. That's the way you'd feed it. But it is perfectly valid to take a half wavelength piece of wire. Do not
repeater, time out. Repeater, time out. Cancel.
Do not cut it in the center. Just decide to feed it at one end. And it would be a very convenient way to do that is to set this vertical piece of wire. I don't care if it's on 40 meters, 80 meters, 20 meters, whatever. Set it up vertically, hung in the air from the highest tree you got on the property, and feed the bottom end of it, a half wavelength of wire, fed at the end, would be something like 2,000 ohms. You need an impedance stepping up device, but once you do that, you would have a much higher performance antenna than center feeding it. And your question now is, why in the world is it 2,000 ohms when I feed it from one end, and 72 ohms when I feed it in the center? It's because of this crazy relationship of higher current in the center but lower voltage, but almost zero current at the tips, but highest possible voltage. Higher voltage, lower current, since R equals E over I, or V over I, if you like using the word voltage, if I got a higher voltage on top of the traction and a lower current on the bottom, and I divide the two, I come up with a resistance, apparent resistance, you and I call it impedance, of 2,000 ohms. Do the same measurement with a real dipole. You measure the current, you measure the voltage at the center, and you divide the voltage by the current, you come up with 72 ohms. How that all comes about, my goodness, there's been a lot of books written on that. You read the book by King, K-I-N-G, wrote a book on dipoles. The book is 8.5 by 11 in size, probably contains 500 pages. It's probably 2 inches thick. The whole darn book is nothing but Mr. King's documenting every possible way you could measure anything you want to measure on a dipole. Is that a simple antenna? I ain't so sure. K K2KEY, who's going to make it simpler, K2LIW.
Quick question, Dick WS2N on that.
Go ahead, Paul.
All my dipoles there, I always, you know, do what you said. You know, you feed them from the center. You got your two connections, and you one goes to one side, one goes to the other. I've really never run a better from the end. I always hear you talk about that. Now you're coming out with two connections mechanically. How do you hook that up? You got, in my case, coax wire. You got one wire now going to the end. Now where does that shielded end go, Dick? You know, you're coming out with a couple thousand ohms on the end. I understand what you're saying there. But I'm just wondering about feeding this thing. If I wanted to do that, where does that other wire go?
John, good question. Glad you asked it. Goes to ground. At first, you'd have a bunch of, you'd think ground plane radials that the shield goes to and the center conductor goes to the end of the dipole. And it looks exactly like a quarter wave ground plane, except that it's a half wave long. The magic of being a half wavelength long is that instead of laying down 32 ground plane radials in order to get full performance, you could lay down one or two, and you would get 90% of the performance. You could even stretch it to the point where the grounding, the shield, could be one simple spike in the ground. Because the impedance there is 2,000 ohms instead of, in the case of a quarter wave ground plane radial, the impedance there is around 30. You're feeding 2,000 ohms instead of 30. That ratio is almost 100 to 1, making things very rounded off. I could say I could divide the number of ground plane radials required by 100, and I wouldn't be completely wrong. I'm feeding impedance that's almost 100 times higher. I can therefore tolerate 100 times more ohms of the ground plane. A grounding rod would give you 90% of the performance. The problem is that this simple vertical ground plane antenna, a vertical half-wave antenna, has never been shown very popularly in any of the books we can get a hold of. It's an antenna that hasn't been given a fair chance. I will admit you've got to do a little something fancy to make your 50-ohm cable go to 2,000 ohms. You don't take the center conductor and connect it directly to the end of the dipole. It connects it to a coil and capacitor which steps up the impedance. It's a tapped coil. It's a tapped coil where it's got a 50-ohm input impedance and a 2,000-ohm output impedance. Very simple circuit. You could wind it around your fingers. You could take the wire that's going to be the coil and wind it around your fingers. It wouldn't have to be a very fancy coil. And put a capacitor across it and tap it at two points. One point would be the very top of the coil. The other point would be one turn from the bottom, so to speak. So it would be a very simple antenna for grounding, a very simple antenna for feeding, a very high-performance antenna.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
And doesn't require those zillions of ground plane radials. Lots of guys have set up a half wave end fed antenna on the balcony of their apartment where the grounding went to the rail, the metal rail of the balcony. That was the whole ground plane. And the antenna itself was electronically a half wave, which mechanically was made a lot shorter because it was wound in a helical manner. And they got very high performance out of that on 20 meters. So as you can see, end feeding a dipole, once you get past a couple of differences from all the books you've read, gives you an extremely high performance antenna with a hell of a lot less work to make it function well. I'm going to turn it back to you, Paul, and see if you made some sense out of all that. WS2N, K2RIW.
Okay, yeah, no, it makes sense because you got the high resistance at the end. Okay, I was just wondering what you do. So, you could actually just go to ground even without the radials. Very good, Dick. I know you get the high voltage on the end. I'll never forget that experiment this one ham did. I attended one of the ham fairs. I think that was out in Stony Brook. And the guy, he had fluorescent tubes, and he'd go down to the end of the antennas, and they were lighting up, you know, and then he had the neon lights. Were they neon? I forgot the other lights. And he was putting them in the middle, just a little alligator clips, and they were lighting up because it had higher current in the middle. But yeah, okay, if you got the higher voltages on the end, the higher resistance on the end, I can see that doing quite well. I know it's not all the time. I just haven't gotten involved with it. I think JW2DX had that. He had the long wire going out the condo, and then he had that kind of a hookup. To, back to your WS1.
Yep, I heard about that demonstration. I was very unhappy that I missed it. Can't remember the name of the guy who did that. I think it was the man-wife team who gave those demonstrations at quite a few of the ham radio conventions 10 or so years ago. I don't know if the guy is still doing it. And I think he did it for Radio Central, one of their conferences. So, that simple dipole, tell me how you represent the voltage and the current and the Z, the E, and the I, Mel. How have you done it where the guys in your audience said, yeah, now I get it. K2KEY, K2RIW.
This is K2KEY. Well, I started way back before this. I started with a simple diagram. And unless you draw this diagram, simple waveform diagram, you can explain it all you want, Dick. But as they said in old Chinese, one picture worth 1,000 words. And this is what it comes down to. So if people want to get a piece of paper, and I go through it step by step, exactly what you just said, and measure impedance along the line, and we could do it in about two diagrams, and I'll tell you what, it was enlightened because I've seen them all of a sudden the faces light up, Dick, because this went from this, because I even proposed another. You brought up a very good a part of this that I also mentioned. How does a 3/8 wavelength vertical work? When I proved that you're going to have somewhere in the neighborhood of about 2,000 ohms impedance, how do you get it to 50 ohms? Why do you need the tuning circuit at the antenna? Why not in the shack and all? And it went on, and Dick, the only way it got it is when I made, when we drew diagrams, a couple of very simple diagrams is what is needed. Go ahead.
Okay, do you think verbally now you could describe to us how to draw these diagrams so that either in our head we see it, or on the piece of paper in front of us, we draw it and see it? Go right ahead, Mel.
Sure, I can, if everybody there has a piece of paper, piece 8x10 piece of paper and a straight edge, a ruler, just take that piece of paper and hold it so that the 10-inch is horizontal, the piece of paper is horizontal, and in the center of the paper, just draw a straight line right from left to right, making, in other words, a zero axis, actually. It's not critical how long you go from, basically almost from one end of the paper to the other. And after you do that, everybody's out there, give them a chance maybe to get a piece of paper and do that. The next thing we'll do is we'll make a vertical line right in the middle of the paper, crossing right through this. Also almost from top to bottom, not quite, leaving a little room on the top and the bottom for some notes. And we could start that way, Dick, and then I'll tell you how to mark it off, over.
I've got that much. I'm ready to go to the next step.
Okay, now let's say from that center line, the center line we drew in the middle of the paper, mark that on top of the paper, right on top of the center line, mark that degrees 180. Mark that 180 degrees on top. Now I want you to make another line parallel to that, about an inch over from this 180 to the left of it. Make a straight line the same way and mark that 90 degrees. Straight down the same way. And then make another inch over. Make another straight line parallel to that. Mark the top zero. Any complications so far? Over.
Okay. So each of these extra lines I drew 1 inch over, and the last one, the third one over, which is marked zero, is still about halfway from the left side of the page. Is that true?
just like I say, making it convenient, you know, to use a piece of paper. Like I say, you can make it, you want to make it larger. As long as they're equally spaced, in other words, go, you know, make it wider or whatever it is. I'm just saying just for illustration purposes. Now this one line that we have in the center that we made marked as 180 degrees, if you want to go now to the right of it, make another line parallel to that, about a 1-inch over, and mark that 270 degrees. Now we go another parallel line to that, about an inch over, and mark that 360 degrees. Everybody follow so far? Over.
It looks like we're about to draw a XY graph, and right now we've only got one horizontal line. We've got 5 vertical lines so far. Over to you, Mel.
Okay, roger. Now, what we're going to do now on the line, let's go back now to the center line. Let's go to the where we marked the 90 degrees. At the 90 degree line, about an inch above the zero line, there's a horizontal line, we marked zero, I think I said that. So on the 90 degree line, about an inch up, put a little mark. And I want you to do the same thing now, put another mark like that, just about at the same level on the zero line, about an inch up on the zero line. Make a little mark there. Now, let's go over the 180 degree line, and below the line, below the zero line on the 180, down about an inch, make another mark. Just in other words, we're going to use that as points where we're going to make a curve through. I just want you so you'll be able to get it symmetrical. Follow so far?
Okay, we got a little bit of a problem here now. The 90 degree line, I went up 1 inch and made a mark. The 0 degree line, I went up 1 inch up from the horizontal and made a mark. That means the two marks on the 0 and the 90 are at the same altitude, and I'm not quite sure where I'm putting a mark on the 180 line. I'm a little bit confused here, so you might want to run this by again, Mel. Go ahead.
Okay, on the 180 line, you're going to go below the 0 line. You're going to go down below the 0 line, 1 inch. The same way. In other words, this time we've been above the line for the 90 and zero marking, but on the 180 line, we're going to make a mark 1 inch below the zero line. Follow?
Okay. And you're about to then tell us what we're going to do on the 270 and the 360. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, on the 270, we're going to make another mark that is going to be at the same 1 inch below the line as we did on the 180. And then on the 360 line, we're going to go and make a dot on the 360 line above the line, 1 inch above the line, the same way, as in other words, that will line up with the 090 point. In other words, 1 inch above on the 360 line. Again, on the 270 line, we're going to go 1 inch below and make that a dot on that line. Is that clear enough? Over.
It sure is. And now as I read from the left, and I start looking at all my vertical lines, and I look at the tick marks that I've made, I've got two up, two down, one up. Over to you.
Okay, now we're going to gently begin to draw a curve. We're going to start on the zero line, 1 inch at that 1 inch up on the zero line. We're going to gently make like sort of like an S curve, and it's going to go right through where we have the 90 degree mark and the zero point. Where that line joins, we're going to come with this curve. In other words, from that 1 inch up, go through that as our little cross point and continue curving until we hit on the 180 degree line. That is the point we marked 1 inch below the line. We're going to stop the curve there. In other words, it's sort of making like a slight, I guess we could call it like an S-curve, Dick. Over.
Yep, I haven't heard enough words now. Am I drawing an arc? Am I drawing a portion of a sine wave? Is my curved line between the tick mark on the 0 and the tick mark on the 90, is my curb line in between the two higher or lower than 1 inch? And so that's not quite clear. I know I'm drawing some kind of a curve, but I haven't heard quite enough words yet to know how to draw that curve. Over to you, Mel.
Well, the 1 inch marking, that is the height of the tip of the curve. And yes, we are beginning to draw sort of, like I would say, a sine wave. I guess that's the best way. In other words, that's 1 inch is coming down and curving like a sine wave, going through the point where it is zero and the 90-degree lines meet, and then continuing on and stopping at the 1 inch point below the 180-degree. In other words, we're making like that gentle curve where the peak of the curve is at the 1 inch point above. I guess that's the only way I can describe it, sort of like a beginning of a, I could be beginning to draw a sine wave, Dick, over.
Okay, when I finish drawing the sine wave, at every one of the places where the sine wave touches a vertical line, will it always be going through the 1 inch up or 1 inch down tick marks that I made? Will I always be converting, crossing a tick mark and no other place? If so, it's not too easy to draw that curve yet from the words that I've heard. Go ahead.
I'm trying to, that's why I'm saying, if you start at the 0 point, make a slight curve down so that it goes through the 0 and the 90 degree where they cross. Continue down with that curve just so it's curving gently and then stopping at the point of 1 inch below on the 180 degree. That's basically what we're doing, making it a slight, I guess, type of gentle curve, Dick. That's the only way I could describe it. And, you know, I'm trying to think how I could really, you know, make it clearer, over.
Okay, I see a little bit of a problem here. On the zero vertical line, I've got a tick mark 1 inch up. On the 90-degree vertical line, I got a tick mark 1 inch up. On the 180-degree line, I've got a tick mark 1 inch down below the horizontal line. I'll just stop right there. You wanted me to start drawing a curve from the tick mark on the 0-degree vertical line. The curve I'm drawing, you wanted me to start slanting it downward, yet you wanted me to go through the tick mark on the 90-degree line, which is also 1 inch up. So I can't make a curve that slants downward, but yet goes from the 0-degree line to the 90-degree line.
Slow scan.
And always goes through the tick mark. So I missed something in the words here, Mel. Go ahead.
Okay, well, we're going to start at the 0 line, 1 inch up. We're going to start slanting down, and we're going to cross. I should have said that. We're going to cross the zero line where the zero line and the 90-degree line come together. We're going to cross at that point and then continue down gently until we hit the 1-inch point on the 180-degree line, Dick. I should have not, you know, mentioned the 1-inch above on the 90-degree right now. I knew that would should have been, that would be confusion. So in other words, we're starting at the zero. We're curving down, we're crossing at the 90 degree and the 0 point where they come together, and then continuing on with a gentle curve until we hit that point on the 180 degree line, 1 inch below it, over.
Okay, I think I see what we've got so far. So I don't use the tick mark on the 90 degree line. I do use the tick mark on the 0 and the 180, and I'm going to be crossing through the 90 degree line very close to the horizontal line, if I understand you correctly. Okay, proceed.
WS1 for Mel.
Head ball.
Okay, from what you're saying, I'm getting like the letter S, and the middle of the letter, the middle of the letter S would be at 0 and 90, correct?
Roger, the S would be starting at 1 inch above on the 0 mark, and going down, crossing the 90 degree point at where 90 and 0 come together. And then we continue on and it stops at the point 1 inch below on 180 degrees. Okay, now what we're going to do with this, we're going to continue on with this slight curve, and where we got the 270 and the zero line, that horizontal line, meeting, we're going to continue with this curve going through that point. Anybody have any questions about that? Over.
WB2HWW. Now, are you saying the thing is offsetted? You're starting slightly above the horizontal axis? Is that what you're saying? You're starting somewhat above zero in the vertical position?
Yeah, Roger. I'm starting 1 inch above on the zero. We're gently curving down, and we're crossing this with the zero and the 90-degree mark line at that point where the two come together. We're continuing on, and we're going through where the point we marked on 180 degree, 1 inch below that. In other words, we're making that gentle curve like that. Now we're continuing on to the line that we marked 270. We're going through that point where the 270 line and the zero, the horizontal line, meet. We're coming with that curve. And then we're going to continue with that curve up onto the 360 line where we marked it 1 inch above that. In other words, we're making that like that, this gentle curve. Is there any problem with that so far? Over.
What is the vertical axis mark? You said inches. Is that marked in voltage or current?
This is only for illustration. That's all, just so we can draw the curve. We'll mark, we'll get into that later, Howie. Over.
I'm just trying to, okay. I'm just trying to visualize it as a blind person. All right, you got the sine wave. It's offset, it's multiplied up by one, okay. That means the sine wave, the horizontal or the center of the sine wave is slightly above the above where the zero would be.
I don't see it that way. When you finish this curve, it is a bathtub-shaped curve in cross-section. It is a U-shaped curve where the tips of the U have been bent over horizontal. Is that one way of looking at it, Mel? Go ahead.
Exactly. It is like a bathtub type of curve. Okay. So you got this curve that's sort of snaking up to its maximum point 1 inch above, and then starting at the zero, going down, crossing in the middle, continuing on again. In other words, repeating its other part, and then repeating itself through the 270 up to the 360. That's curve number. We'll leave that as one curve. Is that so far understandable? Over.
Yes, what you've drawn, Mel, is a sine wave that, from the way a person usually draws a sine wave, that starts at zero. As you proceed to the right, it goes up plus one, comes back down to zero. A little bit further to the right, it goes to minus one, and then back to zero. That's the usual way a person draws a sine wave. Your sine wave has been shifted left or right, doesn't matter, and it has been shifted by a quarter of a wavelength. Over to you, Mel.
A cosine wave, isn't it, Dick?
You got it. I think it is a cosine wave. Go ahead, Mel.
Basically something like a cosine wave. Okay, but I don't want to stop throwing in. Getting complicated is we'll get into trouble making this. We're going to do this very, very simple. Okay, now we're going to make another wave. We're going to start now on the zero line. We're zero line that we have on the left and the zero axis. At that point, we're going to start drawing another curve that looks just like this. And we're going to go up to the 1 inch point that we put on the 90 degree. Well, remember we marked that 90 degree, so I told you put a little dot up there on the 90 degree. We're going to gently curve this thing up the same way, but this time we're going up to the 90. And we're going to curve down through that point, and on the 180 degree, we're going to go through the 180 degree line at that point with the curve where it meets the zero. In other words, we're making another gentle curve like that. Can you follow that? Over.
Yeah, we're slowly drawing a sine wave that's 90 degrees further delayed from the first one. Go ahead.
Okay, and now we're going to continue with that. Going down now to where we put on the 270 mark, we put a little dot there. We're going to continue with that curve down like that through that 270, 1 inch below, and then come back up with this curve, and where the 360 line and the zero line come together, right on that center, we're going to end this one, this graph, over.
Okay, so the net result is two sine waves on the same graph. One of them, you could say, has been shifted 90 degrees to the left of the other one. Go ahead.
Accolade. Now, let's go back now. We got these two curves. Let's go mark up some things now. On the zero line, where we went up 1 inch and the curve begins, let's mark that point E max. E, capital E, max. And continuing with that curve when we went down through the 90 degree and the zero point where we went to with this curve, I want to mark that point E minimum. E, capital E, minimum. Then we're going to go down where this curve went through the 180 degree line at 1 inch below it, and we're going to mark that E max. Is that able to follow that so far, Dick? Over.
Yeah, here in your case, the word max is absolute value max. In other words, how far you are away from the horizontal so-called zero line. So that's how you're getting a max and a min in this case. There are other people who will talk about the bottom of the bathtub being E min and the top of the bathtub being E max. You're talking about absolute value of voltage. So you go from max to min and back to max on those three places on the 0, 90, and 180. You're talking about absolute value of max, I believe. Over to you, Mel.
Just continue doing that where with 270 goes through the 0 line, mark that E minimum, and then at the 360, mark that again, E max. This is the E-max line. We'll call it E-max, E-minimum line. Okay, we've completed that one. Is there any problem with this? Okay, next thing we're going to do. Now we drew another waveform on here. The one we started on the zero line at the point where the zero line and the zero horizontal line, where I marked the zero and the horizontal axes. We can mark that zero also at that point, zero, zero. We started a curve up to the 90, up 1 inch above 90. At the point where we start this, mark that I minimum, capital I minimum. Where it goes up this curve to the 90 degree line, we'll mark that I max. And then when it goes to 180 degrees, when it crosses the 0 and 180 degree line, at that point, mark that I minimum, I-M-I-N. So far, so good?
I see where you're going.
I worked this out, I'll tell you. I'm running out of time here. Continue with that, what we just were doing, and where the 270 line is, and this curve goes through at the 1 inch below the line, mark that I-max. And then when it comes back up to the 360 line and the zero line where the curve now stops, we'll mark that I minimum. So far, so good?
I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 markings per curve, total of 10 markings because there's two curves.
Okay, now, at the zero, where the zero line, let's go back to the zero line on the left. I want to draw a straight line between that and an arrow between that and the 180 degree line. Just make an arrow on each side, you know, like you were going to give a size. And I want you to mark that half wavelength and do the same thing from 180 to 360. Put a line with an arrow going from 180 to 360 and mark that half wavelength. So far, so good?
Okay, so these arrows, one arrow starts at the 0, 0.
270, 3, and good, from.
you're timed out. K28JWHYY, you still on channel? K28JWHYY, you still on channel?
Everybody's still listening, and I'll save the diagram for next week. I'll continue with it, Andy, over. I think this will finally put the rest, this whole misunderstanding of antennas, over.
Yeah, I turned it back on because you were in the middle of you explaining the that concept, and it just turned off because it reached its timeout. It's turn-off period, so I turned it back on so you could finish up if you want to do that.
9126, link clear.
Okay, that's just the link clearing because of the time. But if you hear what I said, I turned it back on so you could finish up.
Okay, let me see if I still got my audience. K2RIW, you still with me? WS2N? Lost my audience, Andy. All said goodnight, and that was it. What can I say, Andy? All right, we'll continue it next week. Like I say, with this diagram and all, we're going to finally put the rest how a dipole and how a feed line and everything works. I finally got this boiled down, I think, to some simple information. Over.
Okay, I wasn't listening because I was out of the room. But somebody just tried to come back. Let's see who's listening still.
It's me. Hello, Mal. I think I'm getting a visualization. You got two sine waves, and they're shifted by what, 90 degrees? Is that it? What is the length? And you got to show the differences between what is voltage, what is current, and you got to show the difference.
Howard, you're getting the gist of it. All right, because I lost most of my audience, I'm going to leave it for next week and all, and I'm going to show them how basically it's all worked and what the relationship is and what about how about the voltages and everything and all. So we'll leave this all for next week. Howie, have a happy and a healthy new year. I hope you had a great Hanukkah, Howie. Over.
Yeah, thank you very much. No, I'm just asking because I'm trying to visualize it. If you're blind, it's tough. I had sight at one time, so I'm just trying to visualize it. And I should have called it a cosine. That's what I was trying to visualize. All right, I see what you're doing. You're going to show the ratios between the two sine waves and the differences, and that's what you're doing. You're plotting the differences in time. All right, I exactly understand what you're doing. I assume what you're going to do is have one sine wave in one color, one wave in one color, and the other one in a different color. Is that what you're doing?
We don't have to get that sophisticated. Once we get these things and I mark, get them marked off and all, I'll explain each, you know, step what's happening. And this way you'll be able to get a good visualization of what goes on with a simple, straightforward dipole, how the impedance is, how the voltage and the current distribution, and then the whole business. This is what we'll do next week, Howie, when I get a full audience again. Take care, and we'll catch up with you next week. Like I say, hope you everything works out well for you in the new year.
I hope you have a healthy and a healthy to you and your family. Yeah, no, I understand what's going on. I just asked because I want to make sure I was thinking about it. I understand the subject. You know, really what people have to do is sit down and actually do the math themselves, draw the waveforms themselves. And that's how I learned it. I went to the same college as Dick went, and they made us, this guy Boyette made us, you know, we had to draw these waveforms. And you really sit down and do all this stuff. That's the only way you learn it, is by actually doing it. All right, 73 to Andy. Mel and Andy, Mel, you have a great, healthy, and a happy new year. And I hope everything will be good for you in 2009.
Okay, take care, Howie. It's a pleasure as always. I always look forward to talking to you, you know, and keep up the good work. You do some great work and very proud of you. So, you know, keep it going for the next year where we value your input all the time. Andy, thank you for keeping it open. WA2CDL, K2KEY.
Okay, yeah, it's actually didn't record the discussion because I was I just got tied up. And Howie, same for me to you. Happy, healthy New Year to you and yours. And that's it. I'm gotta go back to work tomorrow, so I'm gonna shut it down. I guess Dick didn't come back. Mel, back to you.
Hey, take care, Andy. Thank you very much, and as always, you too. Have a great year, Andy, coming up. And we'll do it again. We'll continue this on. Like I say, we're going to do this step by step with antennas and, you know, not jump from one thing to another. We'll go through the whole tutelage and maybe we'll finally get an understanding, because I know there's too much misunderstanding in the antenna theory. And I'm going to keep the math and everything through as light as possible, and that you don't even need any calculator, basically. So we'll do it by that method, Andy. All right, I guess you got to go to work tomorrow, Andy. So take care. We'll talk to you. Over.
Yes, yeah, we'll be on. Okay. Actually, there was a program that I was watching. Dick would be interested if he didn't see it. I heard about it. It was on Channel 13, one of those Nova science programs about the race, discussion about the race towards absolute zero, and what the benefits are and what's coming up dealing with a new form of matter. we'll get into that next time. It's very interesting. Different topic, but same line. See you later, WHCDL. I gotta go.
Get the repeat. Yeah, I saw it. And very interesting, the quest for absolute zero. Yes, very, very interesting. Fascinating. And we'll pick up on that, too. This is something also to discuss in the future. 73 there, Andy. Stay well and have a good night.
Andy, did you turn the repeater back on or didn't shut yourself off?
I turned it on because Mel was giving a dissertation on his theories, and unfortunately, it reached its timeout limit, so I turned it back on so he could finish, but Dick is already gone. So don't worry, I turned it on. Repeat that?
Is the phone or the other way?
That we wish him a happy and a healthy new year.
Okay, Mel came in to say hello to you. No, not on the phone. I did it on the radio.
Okay, I'll shut it off. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, okay. All right, very good. I'm going to go because I got to get up early to go to work. But Mel's still out there. Okay, good night, 73. WHCDL.
Good night, Andy. And Happy New Year to you, Mel.
Eric, we really appreciate your input. Is phenomenal, and you don't know how much that has helped shed light on his HDTV debacle. So keep it up, Eric. We really appreciate it. I applaud it.
Well, thank you. Well, enjoy it while it lasts.
Hey, Eric, talk to you next week. Take care, and don't drink too much. Don't eat too much. That's what they tell us. But listen, once a year, we can have a little fun. 73, it's a pleasure as always, Eric. Stay well.
Thank you very much, and you too, Mel. K2KY, KE2J.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the New England Reflector 912.
Channel 6. Reflector 9126. Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the New England Reflector 912.
Channel 6.
KE2EJ, WA2YY, you still on channel? Station calling KE2EJ. I missed some of those DTV channels you said.